阅读、科技、旅行，
生活可以很大，对话设计、学习，思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客《狗熊有话说》，一听就停不下来的哦。Hello， 大家好，这里是独立知识型脱口秀《狗熊有话说》（Bear Talk）， 我是大狗熊。今天呢，我们请到了一位很特别的嘉宾，来和我们一起聊一聊区块链、数字货币这些你肯定听过，但不一定知道是什么的东西。Hello, everyone. Welcome to the episode of the new episode of Bear Talk. This is Bear here, and today I'm so glad that we have a guest, special guest here to talk about some.Buzzwords of the year, blockchain, cryptocurrency, what the hell are they? And how could they change our life? So let's welcome Kieran McKenzie to my podcast. By the way, Kieran, am I pronounce your name correct? Sorry about that. I'm so bad about
it. Ni hao, Bear.Yes, you are. You absolutely are getting that right. This is Kieran. Yep.
Okay. So, Kieran, so here's some of your brief introduction of you. I found it on LinkedIn and other places. So please correct me if I'm wrong. So Kieran, investor and mentor to startups and mature businesses enabling change in life, tech, and understanding.And also he's fascinated by new technology and how it transforms the way we live, work, and play. As futurist in residence at MYOB, Kieran loves helping businesses achieving success by embracing new ideas and tech. Wow, that's a very official introduction. So could you tell us more about yourself, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's great to be here and exploring new technology and things with yourself. You know, for myself, I was introduced to computers when I was a little fellow. My dad saw the opportunity of computers coming, and he bought a very old PC-80 type computer back in the day. And so I started tinkering around with that.And then when I was at high school, I had a really wise, lovely, lovely old teacher who saw that I had this fascination and said, you're going to need to learn typing. And so she saw the potential of what it meant, but she also knew the practicality of having to be able to type. And so she took me through typing. And I left high school with a fascination for computers, but a practical application of being able to type. And I think it's that fostered in me this...interest in what can technology do. So I'm always exploring, you know, I built the very early 3D rendered model of the Dunedin Town Hall that you could play online in good old Macromedia Director.
Wow, that was cool. Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it is kind of cool. But then you go, well, what was the practical application of 3D technology at the time? And even now, like we're talking augmented reality and virtual reality, and it's amazing stuff, but are we seeing day-to-day practical applications? We're definitely seeing emergence of that, and gaming is a great one. Creating empathy through VR is a good one. We're starting to see AR and VR in medical and, you know, in the workforce. But I'm all, and it's that fascination for me. It's, this is cool technology, but what does it actually mean for the everyday plumber, builder, cafe owner, restaurant owner, that sort of thing.
Well, that, I think that will be a good start for a topic about blockchain. Of course, now everybody's talking about that, and almost nobody knows what it's going to affect our daily life in practical way. So you mentioned practical. I think that's a very, that's the key word of technology.So it will be a good start for blockchain topic. So, of course, today's topic is about the major problem is for us is what is blockchain? So this is the first question. But to answer this question, I think we need to answer another question, which is blockchain. Why do we even need something this complex? I think a lot of... I did a lot some research before and also read some articles, posts about blockchain, and it always went to the definition first. So database and decentralized. So, but I think instead of defining the blockchain, we need to understand the what the problem it solves. And and of course, I went to the event last month, which is held by MYOB, and I met you. And Karen gives us all the all the audience a great example of explaining the problem of blockchain is solving. So, and I just can't wait to share with all the audience, all the guys here. So Kieran, could you share your example to us?
Sure. What I can do is there's actually a video recording of effectively that talk, but one that I gave here in Australia. I'll send you that link, and, wow, and people are welcome to go and watch that one. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I did it, so there's a couple of things I do better now. But look, if we rewind all of that and sort of start with it, the first thing is, you know, well, what is the blockchain? And as you touched on there, ultimately, it's a database. It's a way of storing data. Yeah. The difference is it's a way of storing data in a shared or transparent or distributed way. Now, grossly simplifying, there are different types of blockchain. So we are super simplifying this down here. Yeah. But effectively, it's that. And if we start with that initial question of what was the problem people were trying to solve?
Yeah.
Well, if you look at today's software development mindset, let's say this is a database, right? Mm-hmm. It's a closed environment. The only way you can put data in and out is through a particular space, right? And it's governed through an API or an access point or something like this. But it's completely closed. So you think about identity, your passport details, right? All your passport details, all your medical records, all your all the things that say you are Bear or I am Kieran. You know, birth certificate, passports, driver's license, these types of things. Mm-hmm. They're all stored digitally in a closed environment. Yep. And we only want certain people having access to that sort of information, right? And so that's all hidden away. The problem comes as to, well, I want information to that information first and foremost, right? I want access to it. So I'm currently going through a residency application here for Australia, and I know that many of your audience will have gone through similar applications for overseas residency and that sort of thing. Well, the first thing they say is, who are you? What's your identification? Have you got your birth record? Have you got your passport? One of the things for me they asked was, can we have your entire travel history? Now, I travel quite a bit, and that was a massive document, which took me forever to find. And the way I did that was through my old passports, looking for stamps, looking for emails of itinerary, you know, these sorts of things. The reality is, all of that information was already digitized in a database, but it was locked away. Yeah. And so the original premise or ideas of things like the blockchain was, how do we distribute that stuff? How do we make it visible to the right people at the right time? Could Kieran actually have access to all his information in a nice, clean, simple way? Now, again, for any blockchain people listening, yes, we are grossly generalizing and simplifying the premise here. But for anybody else, the idea was, how do we safely store data in a database, but still allow the right people access at right times? And for some data, it is completely public and always public and available. So that's where the sort of initial premise came from. The question around sort of why do we as technology people or software people, I know you've got a background in iOS and other things, so why do we always want why do we want to look at this complex way of storing data? And there's things around it like the verification of the data. Is it trustworthy? And we use things like game algorithms to understand and unpack the validity of the data. Mm-hmm. Well, the answer to that actually lies in our own technology nature. If we unwind the world and look back through everything from the Stone Age through to the Industrial Age through to, you know, what makes you out of order, but stone to copper to steel to industrial to automation to, we're always looking, human nature is always looking at ways of doing things better, faster, simpler. And software is no different than that. And so we look at database technologies, you know, look at something like MySQL or PostgreSQL. Both of those database technologies have evolved over time to become quicker at accessing data, better at managing shape data, better at managing geo-coordinates. You know, it's always changing because our application and use of this information is changing. And where we're at now is saying, actually, and GDPR is a great example of this, is we as a people have suddenly realized we are generating so much information. And that information is the new oil, right? So data is the new oil. Yeah. But as an individual, I want to control who has access. I want to have more flexibility. You know, for a permanent, for a residency application, I would love to be able to log into a system and say, yes, the Australian government can see this. They can see my passport information. They can see my birth record. They can see my travel records. They can see my job history, right? Mm-hmm. Bang, done. Super simple, super fast. That's I think that is probably one of the key premises of why we keep chasing this dream of a distributed data layer that has data control built into it. We can trust the data, we can trust the validity of the person, or the identity of the person, and we trust the access of the systems.
Yeah, so the keyword is trust. So before before that, if we want to, if for example, if I want to transfer money to you, I need to use a bank service or find a third party. So who can do that for us? I will transfer money to the third party and he or she will transfer to you. So after that, I think it's everyone get used to bank for a long time. So we don't have any we can't imagine without it. So but blockchain is a total kind of replacement for that.
It's a replacement and an augmentation. And I think the first thing is, right now, for anyone listening, is we're not simply talking about the replacement of this technology for this technology right now.
Yeah.
Ultimately, yes. Right now, we're seeing it actually running in parallel. Or it's starting to emerge in certain areas, but not in all areas yet. Your statement there about transferring money between the two of us, that is one use of the blockchain and a great use of cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the trust factor, and this is where business and commerce will change. Let's say I'm buying your car, right? Let's pretend you have a I love a Ford Mustang. So let's pretend you've got a 1967 Ford Mustang.
That's now, cool.
a great car, right? Lovely, lovely car. Now, I need to trust, first of all, that it is an original 1967 fastback Ford Mustang with the 358, you know, Chevy V8, I mean, not Chevy, Ford V8 in the system, right? And I don't want the boss Mustang. So I need to trust that the photos you're sending me, because I'm not in the same city as you, I'm not in the same place right now. Yeah. I need to trust that the photos you send me are not just from Google searches. I need to trust that the VIN numbers and the identification numbers and things of that car are legitimate, original Ford bits and pieces. If it has been restored, who is it restored by? What paints did they use? My father used to be a sign writer as well for a little while, and he actually was authorized to do the stripes on the car. And he tells me that across the roof of the stripes on Ford Mustang, they're not straight. They actually bend in the middle so that when you look at it, it's visually straight. So I want to know that that's all been done correctly, right? So there's those sort of pieces of the puzzle that I want to be able to trust. I also want to trust that the car is yours and not stolen from down the road before I then, okay? So there's that part. But then there's the money part of it, right? You need to trust that I actually have the $100,000 that this car is going to cost and that it's in New Zealand dollars, not in Australian dollars, and that it's consumable by you. And so the idea of the blockchain is that both of those sets of information are trustworthy, and then there's smart contracts and other things we can build around this, but those two things are trustworthy. When we trigger the transaction, we no longer need the bank or a third party to go and verify all of that stuff. We can just do the transaction ourselves and it's trusted across the thing, and I can pick the keys up and know that the car is already in a ship container on its way over here to Australia, and you know that the cash is already in your bank account. And so it simplifies, it removes the redundancy of intermediaries and actuaries and all these other layers that we as humans have built around to foster that idea of a trusted business transaction.
Well, that's that's a profound change. So
it's a very big change, you know. And it will change business because the speed at which we can operate will change fundamentally. The way that we trust each other will change fundamentally. Another good example of this is, and it's just a great one for the Chinese audience as well, because it resonates. Let's say I've got a supplier in China mm-hmm. who's making coffee cups for me. Mm-hmm. Now, over here in Australia, I've spent a lot of time going and finding and building relationships with, let's say, homeware shops. And I've said, I've got this great coffee cup. You need to stock it. And they say, you know what, Kieran? Yes, we do need to stock it. We will buy 600,000 cups from you. And I go, oh, well, that's fantastic. I actually don't have that many. I need to get some more made. I also don't have enough money to pay my supplier. Mm. So I ring my supplier in China and say, hey, Bear. I know you're in Auckland, but anyway. Yeah. Hey, Bear, I've got this deal. And you go, fantastic. We're ready to go. Can you pay us 50% up front? Because we need to buy the porcelain and the materials and whatever else, right?
Yeah.
And I go, well, actually, I don't have that money. Can you either give me a credit, which a lot of businesses do, or I need to go to the bank, borrow some money and come back. So either way, there's a trust factor in that and a complication around me getting the money.
Yeah.
So let's say I went to the bank, 2 weeks later, they finally come to the party and give me some money. And let's say they've given me $100,000. Now I can choose to pay that to you, or I could choose to go and buy a Ford Mustang. And so the bank actually has no control over what happened to that money that they gave me on the premise of me building my business. Mm. In a blockchain world, right, we rewind all of that. I come out of the relationship with the store who have just said, we'll buy 600,000 of your cups. Mm-hmm. And the blockchain technology with smart contracts, by the way, now the pause here for a second. Smart contracts allow us to take all of that process and human steps that we put into all of our business activity. So when I go to the bank and I say, can I borrow some money? They say, who are you? What's your proof of being able to pay back? What's your history of a business? You know, those sorts of pieces. We can automate all of that when you put it into a smart contract. Because again, the smart contract, it's open data. The right pieces of the puzzle have access to the right data at the right time. Mm-hmm. So software can make these decisions. So now I leave that. The bank or a financial institution has loaned me the money that's needed, but they don't pay it to me. They pay it directly to you. Mm-hmm. So you now get a notification saying, here's the order and the cash is in the bank already, and your systems can then automatically kick off, reorder your own bits and pieces, get the process happening, slot it into the production cycle, organize the logistics and shipping, and I get a notification that says, hey, Kieran, Bear's awesome coffee cup company is making your cups. They will be on this container, on this ship. They will arrive in Australia at this time. Customs will do this, and then it will be sent to your... It streamlines and removes all the human steps out of it and allocates it to software. And it is going to make the world a faster, simpler place to do business transactions.
Wow, that's a very, how to say, it's a future that everyone's imagining, but we can't imagine details. And if you are really thinking about it, it's really a big change. So yeah,
it is, and it's exciting change too.
Yeah, very exciting.
And again, we're only scratching the surface of what it means and the efficiencies. You think about the number of companies who are dodging taxes, or I shouldn't say dodging taxes, because they work within the tax systems, mm-hmm. so they don't have to pay all the taxes of the country. But if these sort of transactions are happening in an automated fashion, and again, the IRD or the ATO or the government tax agencies have access, and they're taking the payments and the taxes on the way through, here in Australia, something like $15 billion worth of taxes are unpaid or unallocated because of cash transactions or transactions that aren't captured, shall we say, every year. I mean, $15 billion of taxes go unpaid effectively in Australia every year. What would this country do with $15 billion of additional revenue, right? Mm. So again, if we can start to simplify this process, clean it up for businesses, the tax burden and overhead for businesses is huge. So if we get rid of all that, it just makes it so much easier to be in business.
So even in other fields like social media or industry and other things, other fields will also be changed. Yeah,
you're right, they are. And so another example is what Australia is doing here with the True Beef system. So True Beef is a beef exporting system here, and they export beef to China.
Yeah.
And one of the issues they have is that often in the Chinese market, you'll go in to buy some beef, but there's no way to verify that beef is actually Australian beef. Mm-hmm. And also today, we're very aware of what goes into our bodies. Yeah. So we want to know, is the beef grass-fed or grain-fed? Mm-hmm. Were they given antibiotics, you know, during their life? Were they given steroids during their life? Because you want to know, is that still in the meat?
Yeah.
And so True Beef have built out a blockchain technology that allows along the life cycle of the animal to inject in information. Where was it born? What farm was it raised on? You know, was it grain or grass-fed? Potentially down to the details of, did a veterinary doctor have to come and see the animal at any time? Was it given, was it treated for TB or was it given medicines? You know, all of those processes. You could go down to the level of what trucking company came and picked it up. Mm-hmm. Was it held in storage for a period of time? What company processed it? You know, when we're talking about abattoirs and the way the animal was processed. And in some countries, it does need to be halal certified, or in other places it doesn't. You know, so was it not? And then all the way through to the supplier in China, where I walk into the supermarket and I want to buy it, and then I have some sort of app or interface or tool that allows me to see that history. So as a consumer, I can make an educated decision to buy that piece of meat and not that piece of meat.
Well, that will be a big change for Chinese customers' behavior too.
It is, and actually, that one's in production already. You can we should go and find some links for it, but it's in production already.
Yeah, yeah, Chris. So far as I know, a lot of my friends are very anxious about the formula, what
yes.
their baby's
yes.
taking. It's
yes.
it's a big
Absolutely.
Safety issue
yep.
for
especially
a
with the whole melamine history and rubbish like that, which is just it's really sad, right?
Yeah.
And that's where Fonterra, New Zealand's largest milk provider, mm-hmm. and Alibaba are coming together. I mean, Jack Ma and what he's done with Alibaba is incredible anyway, huge respect to him. But that team are now building out a similar blockchain technology that will allow people to understand where the milk products are coming from.
Yeah, well, that will be a big change. And we know a lot of for blockchain. And I share one of my story. So a few days ago, when I posted a moment in my WeChat, which said I was going to talk blockchain with you, with Karen, an expert in this field. And I got a lot of comments. Most of them are just saying, I don't know what the blockchain is and cryptocurrency. That's also, I don't know that. Could you tell me more about that? And some said it's, I don't like it. It's nothing but sell and buy. They are talking about blockchain, yeah. Okay, not cryptocurrency right now. And one comment said, it's quite interesting. He said, blockchain is something that even illegal pyramid selling guys think it's too dangerous and illegal. So I think it's a common mistake. It's a common issue for people mixed these two things, two concepts, blockchain, cryptocurrency together. And let's talk something about cryptocurrency. So could you tell us what is cryptocurrency and why people always thinking blockchain and cryptocurrency are the same thing? So
let's start with the first thing. Yeah. You said Kieran's an expert in this. No. the reality is that the more you get into this, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there's incredible people who just know more. You are right. And the sad part is that a lot of people talk about this and they go, well, blockchain, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, it's from the dark web. You know, they were selling drugs on Silk Road and therefore it's all the bad people playing. And it's illegal. Look, the reality is the internet has been a place of terrible stuff for a long time. You know, I mean, this road, right? The technology, it was HTTPS. It was the internet. It's the same as what we run Amazon or Alibaba or Google on. Anyway, it's different. It's also where we say, you know, people say cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, blockchain, Ripple, etc., for illegal trade. Well, yes, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Australian dollars. In fact, there's about 75 billion Australian dollars in cash right now. And the government thinks that the majority of it is for illegal trade. It's in gambling dens and, bikie gangs and this sort of stuff. So people will always find a way to do illegal activity with whatever we give them. You could list any technology, and there is an application in the dark world, shall we say. So I think to unfairly paint Bitcoin and cryptocurrency as being purely for illegal activities is wrong and really sad, because there are so many amazing projects leveraging this to lift people up out of poverty, to give people identity, to create a fairer, better world for everyone. So on that note, blockchain, cryptocurrencies. Blockchain, for a simple story, is the ability to store data in a distributed way. Think of it about an open database.
Yeah.
The blockchain technology is the storing of information. Cryptocurrencies is an alternative way of transferring value between party A and party B. Mm-hmm. And I call that out specifically because fiat currencies, aka cash, New Zealand dollar, Australian dollar, yuan, etc., are government mandated or government authorized ways to trade value between two people.
Yeah.
This cup of coffee is worth $4.50, right? Mm-hmm. It's determined, it's allocated, and I can take a $5 piece of plastic out of my wallet, which is only worth 12 cents, but its implied value is $5 because we've been educated that it's $5, and I pay it to the barista, and he gives me a cup of coffee and 50 cents back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way we've been taught that that's what the value, and the token of value is not the piece of plastic. The token of value is the coffee inside and what it does for me. It gives me a boost, it makes me feel happy, I enjoy it, that sort of thing. So we talk about the value of trade. When you and I were in Auckland and we were listening to Jerome from Centrality talk about their platform and what they're doing is building a marketplace to facilitate faster, better transactions and easier payments for people. One of the things he mentioned was that as we look at this new world, business models will have to change. Yeah. The way we allocate funds and the way we pay each other will change fundamentally, because the perception of what is of value will change. So what does that mean? Well, when you think about a current world, there are consumers and producers. And when you think about current models, let's say electricity, right now you and I, generally speaking, can't generate electricity, or at least not at the level where we can power our laptops and our phones and our houses and such like, right? So it's, and I'm grossly generalizing there, but it was the realm of the big companies who were doing coal-powered or water, hydropower or massive big things, pumping electricity into the grid.
Yeah.
And as a general consumer, I'd go to a company and I'd say, can you connect my house? And I will pay you every month. And so therefore, I'm purely a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And someone else is a producer. Well, today, I can actually now go and buy solar panels, chuck them on my roof. I could buy a battery pack, a Tesla battery pack, or someone else, put it on my house. And I now have the ability to create electricity and store electricity, aka the consumer is now a producer.
Producer, yeah.
Right? So we're in this model of changing the world around. Now, how do I pay for that? How do I allocate money for that? How do I rent the grid so I can share my electricity with you? And these are things that blockchain companies like Power Ledger out of Western Australia are starting to wrestle with and solve. And blockchain is the way of storing the data and the information that's pertaining to the transaction. Cryptocurrencies are the token of trade that allow us to transfer the perception of value for that data inside. So cryptocurrencies are effectively a new form of value transfer between party A and party B, leveraging the data and the technology of the blockchain.
Wow, that's very, very simple but very understandable example for me. And now, Chris, later, before that, when I asked you the question about cryptocurrency, Because I'm Chinese, so in China there are a lot of like a fraud or just illegal things, and it's like a chaos. So if you talk about blockchain, if you talk about cryptocurrency, it's a big possibility that you are trying to lie or trying to gamble something. But I think it's a must have. Media for the future if we want to transfer value, and
and it's interesting because we it's easy to focus in on cryptocurrency, right? Yeah. But actually, if we talk about going to a cashless society, so if we rewind 5 years, there was a lot of paper around, right? There was a lot of cash. If I went to the hawker stalls in Malaysia or China, you would have to pay with ringgit or yuan, right? You had to use physical cash. You go to a hawker stall in China today, downtown Beijing, you have to use WeChat, right? You can't, they don't take paper anymore. You scan a QR code and you pay via WeChat. So the movement towards digital currencies or a cashless society is well and truly on its way. Now, that's still using the current mindset of what we call a fiat currency, yuan, Australian dollars, New Zealand dollars, ringgit, whatever. And so that's still built on that mindset. The idea of the electronic transactions, of course, means that in theory, someone else can see it. So from a Chinese point of view, is the government watching everything I spend my money on? You know, and even here, I get that from business people. I don't want the ATO knowing that I do all these transactions. Mm-hmm. You're doing transactions. They should know. You should be paying taxes on it, right? Because we live in a legitimate society, right? And all of the societies want to become legitimized. They amplify that when you go to the blockchain. Because they say, well, the blockchain is distributed, everybody can see it. Well, just because the blockchain technology in theory allows everyone to see it doesn't mean everybody has permission to see it. And there are different types of blockchains as to how we build them. So I suspect that governments will move to the space. But I also think that the likes of Facebook, Alibaba, WeChat, Ant Financial, etc., are the sort of companies who could shift almost instantaneously to blockchain and cryptocurrencies and completely bypass the government fiat currencies if they wanted to. And that's where it gets a little interesting, because then you go, well, actually, at some point, the government do need insight and regulation. Because if we're outside policing, for want of a term, then yes, you're fostering the potential to amplify criminal behavior. But if you are operating within a regulated and legitimate technology, then you could start to minimize the ability for criminal behavior using these forms of payment. The reality is, criminals will always look for ways to transfer value, whether it's cash, whether it's, you know, barter or other ways. But the crypto technology potentially allows governments to bring in all the benefits that you and I as consumers want, and, you know, all the hawker stalls and people want. I just want to sell my amazing chicken wings, right? I just want to sell them. I don't want the hassle of money. I just want to, you know, delight somebody. Then, you know, WeChat or a cryptocurrency does that really easily. If I'm a gambling person and I you know, and I'm doing naughty stuff, I don't want anybody seeing that, so I'll pay in some other way, sort of thing. So I think cryptocurrencies allow us the ability to create a delightful experience, but potentially could also be good from a government or a structural point of view of improving society in so many good ways.
That's great. Cool. And one question I would like to ask, and which I didn't have time and chance to ask last time on the event, is so if cryptocurrency is our future cash, and why the smartest investors of the world, like Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, and Bill Gates, they are not cryptocurrency fans, and they also said something about cryptocurrency. Like I checked that Buffett said cryptocurrencies will come to a bad endings. And also, Bill Gates said it's crazier, speculative things. So, what's your opinion about that? So,
Yes. I huge respect for all of those folks, and I think what you'll find as well is that their story has changed over the last 12 months. You are seeing the emergence of some of them push into the space more and more as their understanding of it has changed. The founder of Apple, Steve Wozniak, Steve Wozniak has just come out and said he believes Bitcoin potentially will become the single global currency for the future. Elon Musk has explored it. Facebook are looking at it. Bill Gates has actually come out and said some really positive things around blockchain technology and potentially cryptocurrencies. Warren Buffett, his team are actually now actively investing in various blockchain technologies and setting up some spaces for cryptocurrency. We're also seeing Goldman Sachs and a whole bunch of these big institutional investors now starting to move into cryptocurrency investing. That is speculation on the value of the coin versus investment in the technology, aka blockchain. I think initially there was a fear of the unknown, and whenever we face change and potentially mass disruption, which is what we're talking about here, there will always be fear, and there will always be those who are there's the traditional bell curve of early adopters through to laggards out over here, and we're kind of early adopters, let's go and do it, it's kind of cool and funky. And then you get people who go, oh, actually there's some potential here. Then you get the people in the middle who go, but you've got the laggards off to the side. And so there's always people who will be against something new. No, we shouldn't do that because of blah blah blah, or and they speak out of places of fear, they speak out of places of unknowing. A lot of males, shall I say, think that it's not good to say, actually, you know what, I don't know about that. So instead of saying I don't know, I'm going to come out as negative against it, which is just terrible. So there are still questions to be answered, like, where will all the taxes come from? How will we manage these things? Will there be one currency, or will there be lots? And if there's a number of currencies, then how do they interchange? There are still some big questions to be wrestled with. But I think as a whole, what I've noticed over the last sort of 6 to 12 months is actually a shift in that market. There are less and less people as negative or vehemently against it as there was 12 to 18 months ago. And I think that's because we've seen a little bit of the hype come out of the market, and people now are actually taking a longer view and a more calculated or thought through view towards the impact and the potential of what these could actually mean for governments and for business and for everyday people.
So I have a feeling that media or just like a newspaper and magazine just amplifies this this feel to all the audience.
But that's no different to I mean, media, their job is to sell newspapers. And to do that, you need to create content that people want to consume. We all like to have a fluffy story about a puppy being rescued or someone doing something cool. We love those stories, but what sells papers is the negative. Volcano eruption, war, murder, the negative always is the attraction. And it's a sad reality of who we are as people. There's media in the paper right now. Melbourne and Sydney are seeing the sharpest decline in house prices in the last 50 years or whatever it is, right? So they tend to use language that hype and sensationalize these things. And look, I'm a blogger, you're a blogger, we do it ourselves, the clickbait, linkbait, top 10 reasons to get into blockchain, we do these things as well. And so you sort of play on those things. And you're right, there's a bit of the fear, or the market calls the FUD side of things, right, of playing on that hype. But then when it stabilizes and normalizes, well, the media doesn't want to report about that because it's just normal, everyday stuff. And you only ever get the sort of negatives or the one or two really positive stories. You don't get the mainstream media and noise. And that's where everyday people who are not immersed in this technology like you and I are only seeing little snippets of it. And so they, like my wife, for example, keeps coming going, oh, blockchain's going down because of da, 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 da. And I'm like, yeah, look, our investment's fine. You know, it's okay because of this. Oh, I didn't even know those other five things existed. No, because the media is not talking about those things as aggressively, or mainstream media. The Coinbase blog and other places like that, they're talking about that because that's where we're hanging out and reading that news. But mainstream just talk about the negative side of things generally. And I've just insulted every media person on listening to the podcast.
Yeah, they are okay with that.
We're all realistic. We know that we need to attract eyeballs, attract attention, and we do that using the tools that we have, which is the language we can speak with, right?
Yeah. So let's back to cryptocurrency, and it seems a lot of cryptocurrency right now. So I've read a blog said there are currently over 1,000 cryptos.
Over. Yeah, probably more like 2,000 now, I think. Ooh. Actually, I haven't seen the latest numbers, but it's got to be way up there.
Yeah, so why are so many cryptos?
The reality is, it's a good question. There are as many cryptocurrencies as there are blockchain technologies. So everybody who's building a blockchain or an adaptation, so a lot of them are actually built on, say, Ethereum, mm-hmm. Which has smart contracts baked in. And the other one in that space is Neo, which I absolutely adore, the Neo platform. So you've got Neo and Ethereum with their smart contract layers that sit over top. But everyone then says, well, we want to be able to create some value or some asset or some information specific to our niche. And to do that, we want to be able to layer a token or a coin or a transaction of value over that system. So how do we do that? And so that's where you get all these white people spinning up all these different coins for their specific purpose and their specific mindset. Some are built as tokens of creating value for a initial launch. Some are actually created as a potential currency. So the Navcoin team are actually putting a specific replacement of currency to be able to find out business growth and opportunities in that space. Now I might be able to kick that list very shortly.
Okay.
Because we've just gone over 12 o'clock, so we might need to wrap things up.
That's great. And we already solved the big problems here. What is the blockchain? What is the cryptocurrency? And I've learned a lot from your speeches, and also where can we find your insight and contact you if our listeners have more questions or would like to see your updates? Where could
sure.
they find you?
So I have a website called thefuturistproject.com. I'll give you the link and you can put it somewhere. And that's a place where I share longer form content. I also put up some of my videos, like what is the blockchain video. I've put up a few other bits, like the future of payments, and I did a video recently with the Navcoin team. So there's content like that up there. The other place is Twitter, and at Twitter I am @KerainM, KerainM. So again, I'll give you that and we can put that up there. Or my LinkedIn profile, and again, you can pop that up there as well. And people are welcome to follow me, listen to my ramblings and ravelings, and ask questions.
Yeah, that will be great. Okay, thank you so much for your time, Kieran. And thank you guys for listening this episode of Bear Talk. I think you probably got some new ideas and new understanding about blockchain and cryptocurrency now. For me, I think they are something too young to define. There are a lot of potentials we don't even realize that. So through some people, there are negative and positive at the same time. But I think one thing for sure is that we are on the edge of a fast-pacing developing age or an age of revolutionary. So anything is possible to happen. So that's just. Get ready for that and don't feel about changing. So thank you guys and thank you, Kieran. So
awesome. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah.
And all the best.
Thank you, and I will see you guys in the next episode of Bear Talk. Thank you. Bye.